Good morning, church. Happy 4th of July weekend. We are in a series called Pray and Prepare. This is leading us up to next week, which Andy just talked about, Mission Sunday. And a big word behind this series is the word discern, which we introduced last week. It's used quite a few times in the New Testament. It's all about decision making. And many of us had to make a decision last night about those fireworks. So if you were tracking with all of that, now if you don't know, by the way, it was postponed. It's going to be tonight, 9:30. But there was a window of time last night where they kept pushing it back, and I was following the weather and hearing all the updates. And at one point they said, we're going to do it at 10:15. And I had to make a decision. Do I go out there at 10:15 on a Saturday night, knowing I got to preach the next morning? It was a hard decision to make. So I want to know, how many of you, had they not postponed it, if they actually had done the fireworks show at 10:15, who was planning on going out? Okay, very, very impressive. The rest of us were asleep. Half of you were like, I didn't know that it was postponed. There are different levels of decision making, and whether or not to go to a fireworks show at 10:15 on a Saturday night, that's on the small decision end of things. It's not a huge decision. In fact, if I had to just make some categories, you have what I would call the automatic decisions, where there's no thought. Brush your teeth, wear a seatbelt. And then you've got the small decisions. They require a little bit of thought, like, do I go to a fireworks show at 10:15? Or here's another one I put on the small end of things. This is a picture from about 3 weeks ago. I'm on a family vacation, and I have to decide, very simply, to jump or not to jump. Now, there's a few variables here. We're in Arizona, in Sedona. It's not that high, so that's not a problem. It's only about 10 feet. It's very deep. I mean, the water's plenty deep. There's no big rocks. That's not an issue. Here's the issue. The water temperature on this particular day was 55 degrees. That is not a hot tub. It's not go well with me. And so I had to decide, are we going to jump or not? Now, at the end of the day, adrenaline and peer pressure kicked in, and both of us jumped. One of us screamed like a little girl, not going to tell you who that was, but we decided to jump. A small level decision on that one. So you got automatic decisions, you got small decisions, and then skipping to the other end of the spectrum, there are some decisions that are just massive, but it's nice because you don't have to make them. Like other people sometimes make really, really big decisions. And in fact, this weekend, I was thinking a lot about this monumental year in world history, 1776. And these people got together, flawed people, certainly flawed people like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, but they wrote this document, this social experiment, the Declaration of Independence, and it has had remarkable ripple effects. I mean, my guess is there was a lot of work that went into this sentence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's quite a sentence there. And the Bill of Rights is a remarkable document, and subsequent amendments, particularly the 15th and the 19th Amendment, which allowed more and more people to have the possibility of pursuing that dream and having those rights and those freedoms. Those are big decisions. Well, you didn't make those decisions. I didn't make those decisions. We can be grateful to be in a place where there is such a thing as freedom, because as the Bible says, we drink from wells that we did not dig. So you've got automatic decisions, you've got small decisions, you've got huge decisions that other people make and we're impacted by, for better or for worse. But then there's this spot about here where I would say these are sizable decisions that you have to make and I have to make, but they're hard. There's not an easy answer. Like what do you do with your future? What do you do with your free time? What do you do with that person in your life that's living in blatant sin? You don't know what to say. You don't know what kind of conversations to have. I mean, some decisions really are difficult. And that is why we're doing this series, Pray and Prepare. It's all about discernment. How do you know? In fact, there's multiple aims behind this series. So one would be your personal life. You're having to make big life decisions. You're having to make ethical decisions on a regular basis. This series is about that. This series is also about next week. Mission Sunday is 1 week from today, and the decisions that you and me make about how much money we're going to give, it has big implications for missionaries all over the world. In fact, Paul put it this way in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7, when he said, each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, for God loves, or without, not reluctantly or under compassion, for God loves a cheerful giver. Well, I find it noteworthy that Paul uses the word decide. In other words, he's giving the Corinthians permission and really encouraging them to put thought into this, intentionality, mental effort. Don't just show up and just, well, I guess I'll just give this. And so you've got a few days here to really think about what do you want to give to our mission efforts in the world. So that's part of the reason we're doing this series. Another reason we're doing this series is because in the big picture, this is a year one of a three-year arc on Mission Sunday. So this year, we're doing Pray and Prepare. A year from now, we're doing Go and Make. And then 2 years from now, we're going to do Share and Celebrate. And so part of this year is we're setting up, we want everybody to go on a short-term mission trip a year from now. And we want you to think about where you would go and what you would do. And some of these trips are going to be already preset by Memorial Road. Some of these trips are going to be dreamed up all on your own. But a year from now, we're going to start to go out into the world to proclaim the name of Jesus and to bring good news to the world and to perform good deeds to the world. And we want you to think about what that looks like for you. That requires discernment. So there's all sorts of reasons why we are doing this series. And even as Andy mentioned, this week we're deciding on deacons. And that's important for the work of a church. Leaders matter. And so we want you to think about discernment as you consider what deacons you'd like to put forth to the elders this week. And so in light of all these aims, I'd like to take a look at arguably the most central passage in the Bible about discernment. 1 John 4, starting in verse 1, we read this. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God. For many false prophets have gone out into the world. By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, which you have heard was coming and is now in the world already. Little children, you are from God and have overcome them, for he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. They are from the world, therefore they speak from the world, and the world listens to them. We are from God. Whoever knows God listens to us. Whoever is not from God does not listen to us. By this we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Okay, what in the world is going on with this passage? First, there are at least three assumptions that John makes in this passage. Number one, there are unseen spirits opposed to the purposes of God. So John is assuming that God is not the only unseen spirit with agency and goals and desires. There are other powers. There are other principalities in competition with the will of God. Number two, second assumption. These unseen spirits manifest themselves in concrete mediums. And so by medium, I just mean some vehicle of communication. A medium could be a billboard. A medium could be a phone. Medium could be a person. In fact, in the text, the unseen spirit of the Antichrist is made visible through the concrete medium of a false prophet. So you can actually imagine, in John's era, there is some prophet standing at a street corner proclaiming truths like, blessed are the wealthy, or Caesar is Lord, or the resurrection was just a hoax. And that false prophet, by saying these things, is a conduit of an unseen spirit of darkness. This false prophet can be a visible form of an invisible evil. Third assumption from this passage: it can be very hard to tell the difference between the spirit of truth and the spirit of falsehood. It's not a slam dunk. So think now about the similarities between John's original audience and us today. So in John's world, they lived in this era of the competition of ideas. And in his world, most people were illiterate. And these early Christians, they didn't have Christian history to fall back on. They didn't even have the Bible, as in the Old and New Testaments, as we have it, to fall back on. So they just walked out in the world listening to ideas, trying to figure out what's true and what's not. And so they might go to the market one day and hear someone say, eat, drink, and be merry. Well, that sounds like a good idea. Or they might hear somebody else say, the body is a source of endless trouble and evil, which is Plato. He talked about that. That sounds like a pretty reasonable idea too. Or they might hear someone say this. This is from famous philosopher Epicurus. It is folly for a man to pray to the gods for that which he has power to obtain by himself. Well, that sounds like a good idea too. We should just work hard. Shouldn't rely on God for something you can do on your own. So they're going out in the world, they're hearing all these ideas, and they're trying to figure out what's true. It's actually pretty similar to what we deal with today. In 1970, the average American saw 500 commercials or advertisements per day. Today, that number is 5,000. So by the time you go to bed tonight, if you're average, you will have seen 5,000 images and ideas trying to convince you to buy this thing and eat this food and be this person. What's your discernment strategy for that? The average American watches 32 hours of TV per week. Every show, every movie, every political pundit carries a theme or a message about life, the world, how we live in it, what it means to be human. What's your strategy? Like, how do you test the invisible spirits behind these visible mediums? So what is John's discernment principle from this passage? He puts forth one giant question to be asked of any potential truth claim. And it's this: every spirit that confesses Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. So this is not a trivia question. It's not like you can just go up to someone who is espousing some idea and say, okay, true or false, Jesus Christ is from God. And that's not really what Paul's getting at here. This isn't a trivia question. This is more of a way of life question. Paul's getting it this way. So you hear an idea. You watch a movie. You see a video. The question becomes, is the main point of this person or video, is it in alignment with the way of Jesus? In fact, let's dig a little deeper here. So when John talks about Jesus coming in the flesh, he's referring to this biblical doctrine called the incarnation, which we read about in depth in a passage like Philippians 2, where we read that Jesus, who is in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing. So there's this downward trajectory in that passage where Jesus gives up heaven for earth, he gives up power for weakness, he gives up life for death. This, in one sense, there's a word for it, there's a theological word, it's called cruciform. It's the shape of the cross. It's a trajectory of life. It's marked by radical humility. You're giving up power for the sake of love. And Jesus did this all throughout his life. So crucifixion was not only marked by Jesus' death, it was also marked by his life. Every day, Jesus is elevating other people. He's blessing children. He's healing lepers. He's treating women with dignity and honor. He'll stay up a few hours later to talk to Nicodemus at night. He's washing feet. Like every day, cruciform, cruciform, cruciform. It's the shape of the cross. And you can live a cruciform life too. We all have to make decisions every day on this front. So when you choose not to retaliate, when someone makes you really angry, that's a cruciform position. When you change your 10th diaper of the day, that's cruciformity. You're taking the path of servanthood. When you listen to someone else's pain, when you give sacrificially, these are signs of cruciformity. So what is John getting at? Every day you and I come face to face with truth claims. Is this show? Is this ad? Is this person? Is this article? Is this post speaking truth or error? Like, how do I know? Well, there's a simple question. Does this idea align with cruciformity? Does this video promote humility? Would this person that I'm listening to speak about their enemies the way that Jesus spoke about his enemies? That's the key question. It's the discernment question. Does this align with cruciformity? So the practice then from this text is this. Every generation must discern what is popular but not cruciform in their day and then avoid it. Every generation has to figure this out. What's really popular, but not the way of Jesus, not cruciform. In fact, if you want homework this week from this message, this is a really helpful exercise. Come up with a list that fits this criteria. Like, what do you think? What are ideas today that are extremely popular, but they're not in alignment with the cross? They're not in alignment with cruciformity. So leading up to this sermon, I did this exercise on my own. I'm going to give you a starter list of a few ideas. There's so many more than what I'm about to give to you. Here's a list of 8 ideas that are very, very popular, but they are not the way of Christ. First one, easier is better. Well, sometimes that's true. I am so thankful to Jesus for microwaves. You know, it's good. Like, I enjoy a microwave. But many times it's not. In fact, that picture I showed you earlier of Ann and I jumping off that little cliff, we took a lot of hikes on that trip. And at the end, I asked the kids what their favorite hike was. And the one that they said, they named it. And I said, why was that your favorite? And they said, we liked it because it was hard. It's challenging. Like, sometimes it's a really good thing to challenge yourself in life and not take the easy road. Number two, entertainment is an adequate substitute for relationship. That's really popular. I don't think it's true. And here's why. Entertainment is a one-way street. At the end of the day, the knowing only goes in one direction. So I might feel like I know Morgan Guillory from High Potential, or Glinda from Wicked, or Tom Holland from Spider-Man, but I'm not known by them. I cannot practice the second greatest commandment while I'm streaming. And number three, self-control is repressive. Again, that's very popular today. In fact, it's very popular today to act on impulse. If you have a desire, so the saying goes, it must be good. And our culture would have us believe that to deny the self is repressive. It's a self-inflicted prison. If you drive to an alcohol rehab facility and ask people there if it's true that self-control is repressive, what do you think that they're going to say? Or find someone who changes sexual partners every 2 weeks and ask them if they have found the freedom they've always wanted. Think about what they would say. Self-control is not a punishment to be avoided. Self-control is a fruit of the Spirit. Number four, I am what I own. Since this service started, 500,000 Amazon orders have been placed. Averages to about 13 million per day. And I, on a weekly basis, am one of those people. But I am also aware that our habits form our identities. And this particular habit is why so many of us feel like we never have enough. We live in the most consumeristic country, arguably, in the history of the world. This is very popular. I am what I own. But that doesn't make it cruciform. Remember, Jesus says, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Number five, I make truth. That's popular. It's not cruciform. Barna did a study years ago where they asked people, what's your primary source for truth? And 90% of respondents wrote in, or they answered the question, I look inwardly for truth. That's an amazing statistic. The vast majority of people look inside themselves to discern what is true, as in your thoughts, your feelings, your past, your personality, your opinions, your gut instincts make up your truth. But yeah, that might be popular, but wow, that is not cruciform. Jeremiah 17:9, the heart is deceitful above all things. Number six, hate wins. I read somewhere last year that we have arrived at a point in our culture where many of us measure the truthfulness of our speech by the adrenaline rush that goes with it. So in other words, if you're putting someone in their place, if you're belittling your political enemy, if you're demonizing your neighbor in a way that gives you a rush of anger, then many of us believe, well, that must be true. We're drawn to hateful language like a moth to light. We click on headlines of animosity. Like something is wrong with the world. This might be popular, hate wins. Wow, that is not the way of Christ, who said from the cross, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Two more. Number seven, consumption is neutral. You ever found yourself saying this one to yourself late at night? What I watch is for me. My private life. It's how I relax, and it has no effect on me or how I interact with the world. Let me ask you this. Would you make that same speech to someone who ate 5 Krispy Kreme donuts a day? Yeah, that has no effect on you or the world. It's just, that's you. That's just what you do. It's how you relax. We're fooling ourselves here. Do you think there might be any connection between your media intake and your sarcasm or your indifference or your anger or your lust? All of life is formation. And Jesus says, out of the heart, the mouth speaks. Who decides what goes into the heart? It's the one holding the remote. At the end of the day, consumption is not neutral. Finally, number eight. Here's something that's popular, but it's not necessarily cruciform. I'll be generous when... ... The story of money in the modern world goes like this. Get your degree, get your career, and then you get that nice, high-quality, luxurious life that everyone else seems to have. And then eventually, once you've bought your second vacation home, at that point, you should decide to be generous with your excess. Okay, that's not generosity. That is self-preservation. And it's not cruciform. Notice this familiar text. Who catches Jesus' eye in the temple and how he describes her? He says, she out of her poverty put in everything she had to live on. In other words, this poor woman didn't wait to win the lottery. She just gave. So if you're waiting on something in your future that will help you graduate into a life of generosity, then you are going to wait for the rest of your life. It's got to start now. So that's just a starter list. And what I'm really getting after here on the homework is, this is a good exercise for you to do this week. What ideas are really popular that we all believe, but they're not cruciform, they're not in alignment with the way of Jesus? And so as you engage this practice, awareness is step one. Let's be aware of these things. But resistance is step two. Once you identify them, we have to learn to push back. And John actually gives us a great hope of how we can do that at the end of this passage. And so we're going to sing in a minute. And while we sing, as is every week, we want you to have an opportunity to respond to a message. And so you can respond to one of two ways. The elders will be at the back. If you want to pray, talk to an elder about something that's going on in your life. They take that role very seriously. And if you want to get baptized, like we've had so many people in the last few weeks getting baptized, it's been such a joy to witness that. You're welcome to come down and to talk with me about that. Now, before we sing, I want to read this line from the text one more time. This is an empowering sentence here. And I specifically want you to dial in here, especially for those of you that came to worship service today and you're feeling tired or weak or despondent or you're sad or you're apathetic. You feel like the work that you do doesn't really matter. Or you keep trying to make progress in your spiritual life, but you keep taking two steps backwards. Or for those of you that feel enslaved by your negative voices today, take a deep breath and hear this powerful truth from 1 John 4. In fact, let's read this line all together. He who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. I want you to read it one more time like you actually believe what John is saying. He who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. So yes, there is an insidious dark power at work in the world. And sadly, it's at work in you and it's at work in me. However, there is also this hopeful, life-generating, joyful, sacrificial, resurrecting power. And it's living in your heart. And that power is stronger. And so therefore, we can celebrate. Let's stand and sing.